Greetings and welcome to the Mayoral Forum. My name is Kevin Masters, and I am a board member for the Black Community Fund. The Black Community Fund was established in 1983 with a gift from the Hall Family Foundation. As of today, the BCF is one of the premier organizations in Kansas City, and we are the largest contributor to not-for-profit and organizations that meet the needs in the urban and the Black community. We focused our deliveries by providing more than $4.3 million worth of grant funding to organizations who have support programs that are within the urban cores of Jackson and Wyandotte County and focused on Black and African American populations. We've also, over the course of the past 10 years, invested more than $500,000 to support a college fund. And as a convener here tonight, we're really excited about our opportunity to partner with the Kansas City Public Library. We appreciate the rich educational programming that the Kansas City Public Library offers to the Kansas City community, and this evening's program is an opportunity for you all to receive insight that helps each of us make informed decisions about important information and important things that are going on in the city's history, insight and perspectives that the Black Community Fund wanted to make sure we help you gain. Thank you to the Kansas City Public Library for letting us be a partner in this collaboration, and we look forward to the events and the conversation of this evening. Thank you very much, and enjoy the forum.
So tonight, my real joy and pleasure is to introduce Nick Haynes. But first, let me introduce our candidates and as they come out. So our first candidate, Scott Taylor. Quentin Lucas. Steve Miller. Jermaine Reed. Jolie Justice, Scott Wagner, Alicia Candidate, and Phil Glenn. And our moderator, Mr. Nick Haynes.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, everyone, to the 3,795th Mayoral Forum. Now, I might be one or two off on that, but do these ladies and gentlemen deserve a round of applause for their fortitude? They haven't seen their families in about 3 months. They're doing this almost every single day. There may be many forums. This one is very different. We're dispensing with all of the usual debate formalities. There's no time limits, no long, ponderous opening and closing statements. We're going to get to the heart of the matter. And as has already been pointed out, as we have such a mammoth field of candidates, we've tried to make this more manageable and comprehensible to you at home by inviting candidates with at least 5% support in one public opinion poll. These are the men and women. I will introduce our candidates to you as we go along. But Alicia Kennedy, you were a first-term Kansas City councilwoman and former assistant prosecuting attorney in Jackson County. When we have a new poll saying 40% of Kansas Cityans, more than 40%, have absolutely no clue who they're going to vote for in this mayoral contest, what is the single biggest difference between you and every other candidate on this stage?
Single difference?
Single biggest difference between everybody else here.
Is that I've been willing to take a long stand on issues that matter to voters, and I have opposed tax incentives that have obligated the taxpayers' general fund dollars.
Scott Wagner, right next to Alicia, has been on the city council serving his second term. He's come from the marketing business, the mayor pro tem, mm-hmm. which is basically the deputy mayor when he's not around. How about you? What is the difference between you and everyone else on this stage, Mr. Wagner?
The difference is I not only know the what, but the how.
Steve Miller, all the way over here, is the former chairman of the Missouri Highway Commission. He's an attorney. You've never held elected office before. Is that the big difference between you and everyone else on this stage?
That, plus the fact that I bring experience and proven leadership that none of the other candidates have had an opportunity to have. So although I have not been elected to office before, I did and was appointed by the governor of the state, confirmed by the Senate, to lead our Missouri Department of Transportation, which is actually bigger than Kansas City in terms of budget, land ownership, and infrastructure.
Right at the end is Scott Taylor. He's in his second term on the Kansas City Council, representing the 6th District of South Kansas City. He's an attorney. What differentiates you from every other person on this stage?
Thank you, Nick. It's good to be here tonight. Thank the audience, first of all. Great record turnout.
I've had wonderful ability to get things done on the council through collaboration, but I also have the private sector experience of 20 years as an attorney and working with small businesses. And that both of those combined have given me the ability to bring people together on difficult issues and get results for the city and for the taxpayers.
Right over here is Phil Glynn, and he runs his own business providing housing and development support to Native American communities as a former member of the Kansas City TIF Commission. What is the single biggest unique quality you bring to this race that no one else on this stage has?
It's my business experience. I've built over 5,000 homes that are affordable to working families and senior citizens, and created over 5,000 jobs by investing in childcare centers and grocery stores and infrastructure. You know, exactly the kinds of things that we need more of here in Kansas City.
Jolie Justice, right in the middle here, is in her first term on the city council, an attorney, former Missouri legislator. The difference you bring to this whole stage that no one else has?
I picked up 8 years of legislative experience as a state senator in Jefferson City. I was in the deep minority, and in 8 years, I was able to get things done. That's something that's pretty spectacular when you think about the fact that there were only seven Democrats down there.
Quentin Lucas is on the city council, an attorney, lecturer at law at the University of Kansas. What is your differentiating factor that no one else has?
You know, I've been able to do some interesting things in adulthood, including being a teacher, but I'll actually go back to childhood. I had the fortune of going to a good private school out in South Kansas City, but at the same time, my family was homeless and lived in a motel on the east side. When you talk about collaboration, if you've lived a life of different backgrounds, that helps inform you for the rest of your life.
Well, Kansas City's homicide rate, rating right now at number 5, at the highest homicide rate in the country. Let's start with you, Quentin Lucas. Everybody talks about crime. What is the single most impactful change you would make as mayor to reduce violent crime?
I think from day one when we start in office, and I recognize all those who say we need to address affordable housing, we need to create more jobs, that's all true. But the impactful thing we could do is stopping the cycle of incarceration in Kansas City. What that means is that we have local criminal justice reform. That's not arresting people for things that are small ordinance violations, it's not criminalizing poverty, and it's making sure that we're not getting people in jail for small and petty offenses that lots of other people won't serve time for.
You've been on the council for 4 years. Why haven't you done that already?
A few things. One, I would like to, as mayor has the opportunity to pardon everyone who's been arrested for a municipal offense. I, on day one, would pardon everyone who has been arrested previously for a municipal marijuana possession violation, because the city has decriminalized in the time since. So that's a step one.
Steve Miller, the single most impactful change you would make to reduce violent crime in Kansas City is what?
Well, Nick, I've got a 3-prong plan that people can go out and look at. But if I had to say one thing, is that the mayor needs to elevate crime to the same level that we've elevated KCI Airport or streetcar, because that means taking all of our resources, public, private, and philanthropic, and declaring this for what it is. This is an embarrassment and a tragedy for our city, and it takes all of us engaged wherever we are in the city and the metropolitan area to combine together to get it done.
But you've never held elected office before. How can we have confidence in you that you could actually achieve that?
Well, Nick, I've told you before, I've had an opportunity to lead a unit of government that's bigger than Kansas City, and in part of doing that, we also had the Missouri Highway Patrol underneath us, and we had to encounter all kinds of crises. So we had to deal with natural disasters like flooding, which is going on now. We had to deal with the Ferguson incident, which we did on our highways safely and responsibly. And I bring 35 years in the courtroom of being able to solve and address problems.
Scott Taylor, what is the single most impactful decision you could make if you are elected mayor to reduce violent crime?
Well, we're doing it right now, Nick. The last budget, I really advocated for more police officers on the street, not to have the officers on the street, but to do community policing. If we want actual community policing, they have to have time instead of going from call to call to call. So we added 24 officers last year. In the budget tomorrow, we have 12 more officers because of the Finance Committee's vote today. I've worked on a lot of these community events that the new police department is working on. It's bringing families together, creating those bonds and relationships that will help reduce crime when there's a trust in the community again.
Phil Glynn, do you have a different answer than the three you've already heard?
It's affordable housing. A lack of affordable housing.
For the violent crime issue?
Yes, and here's why. I think adding more officers would help. Protecting the funding for the social workers and our patrol divisions would also help. But long term, we have to recognize that
The violence in our community and the failures in our economy are fundamentally linked, and if we don't help stabilize families and neighborhoods, we will not become safer as a city.
Jermaine Reed, single most impactful thing you could do if you were elected mayor to reduce violent crime in this
community. I would add on to much of what has already been said for sure, because one, this is not a one-size-fits-all solution. This is the biggest problem that is impacting our entire city. And so while adding on to much of what many of my peers on the dais have already said, I would work to make sure that we are expanding workforce development and providing job opportunities and job training for individuals in our city. That is the most important thing, because the way out of crime, the way out of violence, the way out of situations that you are encountering in your daily life is to be able to have a job, to make a meaningful impact in this actual city.
But you have been on the city council already for 8 years. Why hasn't those things already happened?
Well, because, and let me, I think it's important that we establish protocol, because number one, you shouldn't have to heckle one way or the other. All of us here have different experiences and bring a number of voices to this discussion, and I think it's important for the crowd not to heckle us, and that's number one. But in terms of your question, as it relates to why, I personally cannot handle this by myself. This is something that all of us in this entire city, also the members of the city council and the mayor, and also the entire community, we are all responsible for making sure that we have an impact on reducing crime and violence. Over my career, I have worked at the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime on the front lines of this issue, working with individuals who have been impacted by crime and violence in this city. I understand and know that most people who have come into the system, many times it's at least 80%. 80% don't even have a high school diploma. And so it's important that we as a community are able to wrap our arms around this and be able to provide a better quality of life for every single person in this actual city. You and said, I cannot do that alone.
You can't do that alone, but how are you going to do any more than when you're mayor?
Well, obviously, one, and I know that we'll have a conversation about this a little later, is that we as a city do not have local control. I would become a member of the Police Board of Commissioners as the next mayor of the city or whoever is elected, and we have to make sure that we're bridging the gap between not only the Kansas City, Missouri government, but also the county prosecutors, the police department, and all of the entities that are responsible for
this. Thank you very much. Councilman Wagner, the single biggest impact you could have on reducing violent crime if you were elected mayor is what?
The single biggest impact that you could have is if you show that you're serious about crime. I'll remind everybody, back in 2013, there were 82 homicides, the lowest that we had in 40 years. Last year was 136. The year before that, it was 151, which I guess is an improvement, maybe, depending on how you look at that. But at the end of the day, you want to get back to where you're back to the 82. How do you do that? You show that you're serious about crime. I will tell you that you didn't have any more affordable housing that year than you did any other. You didn't have any more educational achievement back there before any other. So what do? The mayor is a part of many different entities that affect crime. The police department, the city through Aim for Peace, through the health department. There is a violence-free KC that the mayor has never attended. I have someone there that goes every day. The issue is you've got to build cases that can be prosecuted. You do that through the use of the police department, and then you can do preventative measures through Aim for Peace and other agencies that do that work.
Alicia Kennedy, do you have any other solutions, the most impactful solution to reducing violent crime in Kansas City if you were elected mayor?
I'll tell you, I will not lead it like the streetcar and the airport were led, because I was not happy with how those processes played out. But I will tell you, as the next mayor, it will be my number one priority, being intentional and deliberate. The most impactful thing the mayor can do is to make it a budget priority, and that means adequately staffing the police department to make sure we have enough officers to address community safety, officer safety, and also to be able to conduct the investigations. We have to move beyond the trigger to address the mental health and social issues that impact violence in this city. And in addition to that, we have to make sure we have a conversation where all the resources are on the table, all the community partners, and the city budget is willing to put some skin in the game to make sure we're addressing the issues, and we have to make sure the community is leading the discussion.
What are you cutting from the budget then to allow more resources to be provided for policing and law enforcement?
Well, I don't think you have to cut anything. We have an obligation under the city charter that we have to provide 20% of the city's general fund to the police department. Anything beyond 20%, we can enter into a contract with the police department for services, and so there's an opportunity for us to influence how they're staffing to make sure that there's appropriate number of officers on patrol and in investigation bureaus, and that will create a reduction in crime.
The single biggest impact you could have on violent crime if you were elected mayor is what, Jolie Justice?
We've spent the last 60 years in this country getting tough on crime, and we've just started getting smart on crime. And that's exactly what we can do to violence prevention in this city. The single biggest thing that we do is you've got a mayor who believes in the public health approach to prevention of crime, a mayor who believes in getting smart on crime, and she's going to sit on the police board, and she's going to take those ideas and beliefs to the police board and make sure that we're focusing on specialty courts, on reentry services, on making sure that we have criminal justice reform, not just at the federal and the state level, but at the local level. That's the single biggest thing we can do.
It's a $1 billion budget, 2,000 employees at City Hall. City Hall runs lots of programs and services. Which one is so good that it deserves more money, and which one performs so poorly it deserves to be eliminated, starting with you, Councilman Wagner?
Well, let me remind you, $1.72 billion is the budget that we're going to do tomorrow. We have about 7,000 employees, including the police department. Every one of those folks that work for this city do the best job that they possibly can. So it's not a matter of do they do a bad job. Sometimes it's because of the capacity. But I will tell you this. Based on everyone that I talk to, the problem that we seem to have over and over again is continues to happen in our city planning department. There are people here who want to do business in Kansas City. They want to develop in Kansas City, and not just the big high rises, but little small things. And they have a problem when they try to do that in Kansas City. That is an issue that needs to be addressed. The one that needs the most capacity, though, I'll tell you, is Public Works, because we should be spending a lot more money than we do. We are increasing the amount that we are spending on street resurfacing to $17 million, over $10 million last year, but they need more help, and we know it.
So that's where the money would go. How about a program or service that needs to be eliminated? You don't have one?
Well, I will tell you this. There are programs that can be, well, actually, I'll tell you this. We used to do trash for 40 years, most of it done outside of the city. We are having to bring it in because right now it is cheaper for us to do it. And so the question isn't who should not do it or where it should go somewhere else. It's all cost-benefit, and that's the analysis that you have to do as mayor.
Councilman Taylor, the program that is doing so well, it deserves more money, and the service that the city did provides perhaps shouldn't be doing it. They should eliminate it.
Great question. So I would first say, across the board, I think one of the things it's been an honor to serve with so many dedicated city employees. We have a lot of employees that really will work overtime to make sure constituents and citizens are taken care of. We have a lot of great people within these departments. As far as an area to cut, I think I said this back at a forum you hosted back in 2015. I think we need to look at, it's a small dollar item, but I think it would send a message, taxpayer-funded travel for council members and mayor. I think there's too much of it. I think the Star reported $160,000. That would be an easy cut on day one.
Phil Glynn. Program that deserves more money and one that should perhaps be eliminated at City Hall.
A very important program that has just very recently gotten underway is having social workers in our patrol divisions, embedded within the police department, helping build relationships with the community. I think it's already showing some results. It needs to grow. An area of spending that I believe needs to be cut is, I don't believe the city should be spending millions of dollars on building new parking garages at a point in time where the way that we use our cars and the way that we use our transportation system is changing so much.
Jolie Justice, being on the council now for 4 years, what about a program that deserves more money and one that should be eliminated, perhaps?
I'd like to see us spend more money on our specialty courts at the municipal court level so we can address some of these violent crime issues that we've already talked about. And then as far as elimination, we are in conversations right now, and I want to see them keep moving forward, about continuing to combine all of the parts of our Kansas City Police Department and City Hall. That includes benefits and not just our IT department.
Jermaine Reed.
Well, I would increase funding in our neighborhood housing services. All of us care about our quality of life. And one of the things that is most important is that we are able to pick up the trash on time, the legal dumping, that we're able to get it up, picked up, and a number of other things that we really need to be focused on. And it is the most underfunded department that we have in the city. And it's an area where all of us really care about 365 days out of the year.
How about a program that perhaps should be eliminated at City Hall?
Well, you know, I wouldn't necessarily pinpoint a program right now, but I will say that I do think that there are some costs that the city manager has in his own department that I don't think are very effective and do not help with moving the quality of life forward. And so I would eliminate some of those positions.
Steve Miller, you're an outsider looking in. Is there a program that deserves more money? And perhaps looking at your business background, one that should be eliminated?
Great question, because I'm going to bring that kind of fresh perspective to City Hall. Well, those that read the Kansas City Star today know in the guest commentary that I authored, the first thing we have to do is honor the promises to the voters in this community that said on three different occasions, if they voted for a tax extension or a tax increase, that they were guaranteed that the money devoted to our infrastructure, in particular to our roads, was going to go up. and over 5 years that it went down. So the first thing I would do is honor those three proposals that were voted on by voters, honor their tax dollars, restore the funding as it was intended. Regarding what to do with money, again, I bring a unique perspective because when I was at MoDOT, we were faced with fiscal constraints, much as the city is. But we stepped back and we looked at, are there better ways to do this, better ways to reinvent government? And happy to talk about those in detail, but in summary, we found that by consolidating facilities, consolidating equipment, putting people in the right places, over a five-year period, we saved $600 million. And those changes today that we initiated 9 years ago have now been almost $1 billion that have gone back to taxpayers to be placed on the roads and the highways. I know within this city there are opportunities. Let me give you two examples, Nick. One is redundancy of services between Jackson County and the city. Redundancies in fleet maintenance, human resources, et cetera. We ought to explore that. And the other is we've talked about the police department. One thing that local control might do and a reason for doing it is we have redundancies between the police that operate on a state system and the city that operates on a different system. Redundancies in pension, human resources, fleet maintenance, et cetera. Those are some of the ideas I bring to City Hall.
Quentin Lucas.
All right. You know, one brief tweak I might make to what Steve said. It's not so much that we have cut just in broad road spending. We're still spending on roads, but in too many situations, we're building, frankly, new roads. We're contributing to sprawl in our city. And I think that's been some of the concern. I think the reason we're seeing so many potholes right now is because we were supposed to be doing road reconstruction. We're supposed to be doing rehab in older neighborhoods of Kansas City, and we haven't done enough. But to get to the answer that you asked about, you know, fundamentally, in neighborhoods and housing services, we have one department that is supposed to be thinking about the future of affordable housing, and that's also supposed to be picking up trash. One department that's trying to be thinking about poor folks in Kansas City, and a department that's thinking about codes enforcement. We need to separate the housing department and the neighborhood services department so that we have a housing department that's actually focused on the creation and the maintenance of affordable housing for our city. So I would increase funding for both, and indeed separate both of those services so that we're doing trash pickup separately than actually housing long term.
After 4 years on the council, you couldn't find a program that perhaps that needed a service that needed to be eliminated.
Actually, over my 4 years on the council, I actually did find things to eliminate. For those who paid attention to it, I introduced an ordinance that actually cut the city manager's spending capability. Before, he could spend up to $1.3 million without council approval. I cut that number down, so in professional services, a $50,000 contract has to go through council. That's key. So I would continue to cut funding on consultants and lobbyists because that's not what the taxpayers need.
Before we move on, we need to hear from Alicia Kennedy on the same question.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I will point out is that when we talk about what needs to happen, what should not happen, ignorance is bliss. As a new council person, I came to City Hall from the prosecutor's office thinking I was going to do all the great smart policing techniques that I read in books, and I quickly learned that the city budget is mostly already spent. And so unless the next mayor makes it a priority to invest in those areas of critical need, it's not going to happen. It's not about having ideas. It's about being intentional about where you fund areas in the budget. As far as areas to make cuts, there are so many areas to make cuts in City Hall. If you spend any time there, and I don't think anybody spent more time there than maybe Mayor Pro Tem Wagner, my first term, you get to learn what departments are doing what and what departments are not, and what departments are doing what with less. And I can tell you, there are, I believe, too many assistants to the assistant city managers, number one, because he has directors that oversee every department. So that's one. Number two, the mayor's office has over 20 staff people. That's another area opportunity to make some cuts. And that money can easily be redirected into social programming in communities. Next thing I would look at is this owner's rep we have for this airport we're paying $10 million a year to that I've yet to see any work product from. So there are opportunities for us to look at ways to save dollars. Not necessarily that those dollars would come back into the general fund, but we have so much waste. And I also will be open to the conversation about what the city manager's role is going to be going looking forward, because my priorities are that reflect that of the taxpayers. And currently, the budgets we've seen from this administration do not always reflect the same.
And we have actually six assistant city managers right here in the room who are now considering who they're going to vote for in this election, ladies and gentlemen. Now, some people believe that tax incentives are the biggest issue in this campaign. That's just some people. They think we've been too generous in giving away tax breaks and incentives to developers. Complete this sentence for me. As mayor, starting with you, Steve Miller, the number one action I would take to change the way tax incentives are provided in Kansas City is blank.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is we have to completely look at the world from a different perspective. The problem is now that the community feels that those have been wrongly directed in some instances, and that people in this community are not being cared for. But this is the amazing thing, is I ask people, what is the plan for the city that ought to dictate where we invest? Because that's what our tax incentives are. They're investment of your money and my money. And the reality is, the plan that we have is gone and outdated. It's the focus plan from 1997. So I've called, as mayor, I'll start a new plan that will include all stakeholders around the table, and on an overlay of that, we're going to deal with the issue of incentives and identify with everybody around the table where you and I ought
to invest. But you haven't identified at this point a single change that you would make to the way tax incentives are currently provided in Kansas City. You're going to be studying this.
No. I mean, if I was going to do something right now, the first of all, they do two things. One, all the different ABC groups that put those incentives out, they ought to all be required to pay prevailing wage, because everyone's entitled to a living wage in this community. And the second thing is that the taxing jurisdictions that are affected by that, they should have a seat at the table of all of those. Right now, they sit only at the TIF Commission. They should have a seat and be involved in the discussion. I would do both of those things right now, but we need the big
plan.
Thank
you very much, Scott Wagner. The biggest change I would make if I was mayor on tax incentives in this community is blank.
Be intentional, negotiate, say no. And what I'm saying, mean by that is, the system we have is a passive one. If you've got an idea, you come to the city, you say, here's what I've got, and you either say okay or yes or no. Well, if there are things that we want to do as a city, then we need to be looking for the developers who will do the development that we want. And you have a great example of that with what happened at Linwood and Prospect, with a grocery store that we wanted to have there. And I give Councilman Jermaine Reed a lot of credit for that work. But you have to negotiate, too. You can't just say, oh, here's your deal. Okay. You have to actually push back and say, I like this, but I don't like this. And if they don't do that, then finally you have to say no. And I've actually voted against TIFs. I've actually voted against PIEAs. I've actually voted against super TIFs. And I think I'm the only one that's done that.
Jolie Justice, the single biggest change you would make to tax incentives in this community is what?
You need to add more responsibilities, more skin in the game for the folks who are getting the incentives, and then you need to make sure that there are clawbacks when they're not met. This is incremental financing. We need to go back incrementally and say, did you meet this goal? If you did not, you have to pay.
Scott Taylor, did you have a completely different answer to the ones you've already heard?
I do. I have the unique difference up here. I've served as a school board member for 4 years on the Center School District, so I have a different perspective on it. We need to grow our economy, but we need to use our tools in a targeted manner. One change, we already have clawbacks that were just mentioned. We also have an outside party that pushes back. That's why there wasn't a downtown hotel right next to City Hall. That project died just in the last few months because we pushed back. So we need to keep doing that. My focus, though, if I could answer the question, the last 2 years has been on turning the ship to the east side of the city. We need to revitalize east of Troost and really make an intentional effort as a city. The next mayor is really going to be able to send that message in a strong way.
But you've been on the council for 8 years. What have you done to actually achieve that already?
Well, I worked for 2 years with neighborhoods in the 3rd, 5th, and 6th District to put together the East Side Revitalization Plan, which also streamlined the process to make it easier to develop on the east side and provide resources for neighborhoods. So we need to do more of that.
Quinton Lucas.
Yeah, absolutely. A few different things we need to do. Right now, we already have conversations about prevailing wage in these projects. I think not just saying that the school districts get a seat at the table, but they need to have a veto over projects. Right now, in Kansas, if you go over to the Shawnee Mission School District, the Blue Valley School District, they can actually veto tax incentive deals. Any of the school districts in Kansas can. Ours in Kansas City, Missouri, should. In addition to that, we need to change the form that we're using. Largely, we're still doing tax incentives based on blight remediation, but as you know, Nick, we've declared almost everything in this city blighted, from the Intercontinental Hotel to anything else. And so what we need to say is that when we're giving incentives, it relates to affordable housing and job creation, quality jobs for working class folks, not for this ambiguous blight.
Councilman Jermaine Reed, congratulations. You've just been named mayor, and the biggest change you make to the tax incentive programs in this community is what?
Well, I'll pick up where Councilman Lucas left off, because there is that but-for clause that we have to be very intentional about ensuring that we are putting development where it happens. During my 8 years on the city council, I have done just that. It has been referenced already, of course, about the grocery store at 31st and Prospect, but also at 31st and Prospect and also at 39th and Prospect. But I was very intentional and also had a sense of urgency. A quick story. I'll never forget going, and then I'll answer the first part of the question. I'll never forget going into the TIF commission meeting at 25 years old, just elected to the city council, and one of the commissioners said to me, we're not going to do that project over there at 39th and Prospect. And I said, well, why? And he started asking me, well, who I was and everything. And I said, well, I'm on the city council. I'm Jermaine Reed. And he says, well, you're kind of young. I've got clothes older than you. And I turned and said, well, you should get new clothes because it's important that we make this happen for the heart of our community. And so the first thing that I will certainly do is make sure that we're appointing people who really care about being inclusive and intentional about all of this entire city and ensuring that wherever you are, not just east of Kansas City, but if it's south or if it's west or wherever the parts of our city that are blighted, that we're doing just that.
Alicia Kennedy.
Well, I will tell you, when you talk about incentives, you have to move to the conversation to the point where you're creating transparency and accountability of the policymakers by requiring the council members to disclose when they're accepting donations from the developers for their projects. Too many campaign contributions. There's a direct correlation of those who are receiving campaign contributions from developers and those that vote consistently yes on taxpayer-funded projects. And we could talk about veto power of schools, but if you're rubber-stamping development deals that obligate the city's general fund consistently, it's all rhetoric. We got to move beyond that, create accountability, and make sure that any incentive project in this city meets the needs of the people. It has a community benefit agreement that gives back.
Nobody has quite got it right until we've heard from Phil Glynn and his view on tax incentives.
We got to stop giving them to corporations that don't need them in parts of town that are already doing well. And the experience that I bring to this is as an investor. I represent investors, and they have a right to demand a return on their investment. When we grant a TIF, we all become investors in these deals, and we need to look at it that way. I spent 4 years on the TIF Commission, and when I saw bad deals come across that took money away from our public libraries and our public schools, I stood up against them. And ultimately, it cost me my seat on the TIF Commission, but that's okay, because we have some major changes coming our way in this community, and the only way that we're going to get through them and come out stronger on the other side is if we are all starting to say what we think and stand up for what we believe.
Thank you. On the same day voters will decide this mayoral race, they will also decide on a plan to raise sales taxes for pre-kindergarten programs. Not everybody has to answer this. Is there anyone on the stage who says it sounds like a good idea, but I plan to vote no? Okay. Oh, wow. All righty, fine. Quick answers on that. Why would you be voting no on that? Because doesn't everybody love pre-kindergarten? What's wrong with you?
This vote is not about pre-K. It's about a sales tax. And the city has priorities we have to address economic development, primarily housing. We have over 5,000 units that are short of affordable. That's between $600 and $800 a month. How are we going to pay for it? If we're going to spend $30 million a year to pay for pre-K, which is not a function of the mayor or the city hall, and we're not going to address our needs, it's going to be just like the roads that we've been dealing with.
How could you be possibly against pre-K programs, Councilman Wagner? Well, you're wearing an I Love PBS pin.
Oh, well, I know, because it is as apple pie as PBS. But, you know, I've been a neighborhood president. I've gone to a number of neighborhoods over my 8 years. And when we talk about issues and problems, never once is pre-K brought up. It is everything else that you've actually started to talk about here today. So if you're going to take away your capacity to actually invest in the city, then you should choose wisely what you're going to do with that capacity. And to me, pre-K is not it.
Who else said they would vote no, even though they think it's a good idea? Yes.
One, I want to applaud Mayor James, because it's important to point out that pre-K is extremely important. However, the method in terms of how we are trying to fund this from the 1305 statutory authority, which basically puts a cap on the 1305 tax. The 1/8 cent sales tax was basically authorized to be able to use that fund. That will eliminate the rest of it. I think the tax is regressive. All 15 school districts are against it. And I think even furthermore, we have to make sure that we are working with our school districts to ensure that they have a seat at the table in the plan that we have right now. They do not.
Thank you. Did I see your hand raise on that, Steve Miller?
You did, Nick, and partly way up in the sense that I have really struggled with this. I have really, really wanted to support pre-K because I saw the difference that it made for my own children that are now grown. And I see the difference every day in those individuals in our community that most need help with education. They come to kindergarten already 50 yards behind in the 100-yard dash, and we can't continue to do that. But the problem that I have with it, besides what we've heard, the fact that the process was not collaborative, that the tax was regressive, that the sales tax should be used for economic development, not education, that it's the highest sales tax in the region. I also listened to what I've heard from the other council people supporting it, that it's, you know, $30 million immediate impact, we got to do something. But at the end of the day, what was determinative for me is as I listened to those communities that were intended to benefit most, those communities, our African-American community, our Hispanic community, I asked, is there a single leadership group? Is there a single person that is prepared to endorse this plan? And I kept hearing no from the east side to the west side of the city, and I'm listening to people, and okay. That's what's made it really hard
Thank
for me.
Thank you very much. Did Quinton Lucas also say no to this?
I said no. My biggest thing is we talk about collaboration till the cows come home, but when every public school district is against it, the people that are in charge of education of this city, then that tells you something. But I have one other point. This program, if you look at it, is slapdash bureaucracy that we shouldn't be doing. For anybody who's lived in Kansas City for some decades, we remember court-ordered desegregation era, where the idea was if we spend hundreds of millions of dollars, things are just going to get better. So for me, what I'm hearing in this situation is they're saying there's going to be a lot of money, and then it's just going to work. That's not how education works. We should work with school leaders to make sure it's impactful, and that's the way to do it, not just saying from the outside, we're just going to foist money in and force people to agree.
And everybody else on this panel is supportive of it, so you've seen differences.
No, actually, just to jump in there real quick, I'll be voting against it also.
You'll be voting against it? You said you were concerned about crime. Mayor Sly James says this is about preventing crime.
I'm against it for the same reasons you've heard before. Our educational leaders stand against it, and the burden of the sales tax will be borne by the lowest income people in our community, and that's not fair.
I cannot spend one more moment without mentioning affordable housing. We have been in this forum with packed audiences before looking at the eviction issue, lots of issues relating to housing in this community. Let's get to that issue, particularly in a city, by the way, with a much higher rate of renters than in other comparably sized markets. What is the biggest, most impactful change you would make to expand housing for lower income residents? Scott Taylor?
Well, it's a combination of things. It's not one answer. So we need to take existing housing stock, repair it. That's why we have the $10 million home repair fund. We're trying to get privately funded through banks. We need to tear down blighted building houses in neighborhoods so that people will be able to live in their neighborhoods without the fear of crime in these blighted houses.
But you have been on the council for 8 years. Why could you do more things as mayor that you haven't been able to do?
Well, that's why I spent the last few years getting together with the 3rd, 5th, and 6th districts to put together the East Side Revitalization Plan to put these things in place. We also need, I can tell you, sitting on the Economic Development Committee, we need a local fund. And so the Housing Committee has come up with a $75 million fund. We need to get it funded. The next mayor will be the one that gets it done because, you know, if we really want all kinds of new housing that's affordable and workforce, there's always a gap when the project goes to a bank if you want to keep the rent very low. And so we need that local fund because we can't wait on Washington and we can't wait on Jefferson City for low-income tax credits because we can't control what the next governor might do with that program as well.
Alicia Kennedy, the single biggest impact you could make on expanding affordable housing for low-income people in this community, if your mayor is what?
One, we're going to have to establish a new funding source. The need is so great. And we have to go back to funding community development corporations. When the federal dollars dried up, so did our CDCs in the community, as well as urban redevelopers. We have to engage the private sector so they can begin to use their existing housing stock with some policy, Chapter 353 tax abatements, and some patient capital for them to make improvements and be able to keep the rents reduced for people that want to stay in the core of the city because we're currently pricing people out. We heard from a young lady last night that she was priced out of her apartment. The rent went up 80%. And so we want the private market to come in and make those investments. They're going to raise the rent, and we have to provide some assistance to help them do that.
Steve Miller, the biggest, most impactful decision, choice you would make as mayor to improve the affordable housing in this community is what?
P4s. And a P4, you've heard of P3, which is a public-private partnership. Well, what's being explored in other cities with this problem, like Detroit or San Francisco, is what is called a P4, which is public-private philanthropic partnerships. Because, Nick, it's all about money. We can all talk about what we'd like to do, but it's show me the money. And the only way we can get enough money to address this situation is we have to reach out to all quarters, and that's our public, our private, and our philanthropic communities. And we have a great model, actually, in Kansas City already doing something else. 35 years ago, I was there with my father, Dick Miller, founding Christmas in October, which had the insight to create a not-for-profit that then reached out to business, like the big companies in Kansas City, and brought them in and brought philanthropic dollars in. We need to take that same concept. which already has a history of success on our east side of keeping people in their homes, keeping it affordable, and now we need to leverage it up, and I'll do that.
But a mayor is not a CEO of a company or a nonprofit. They have to get 7 votes altogether to actually make something happen. What evidence is there to suggest you could actually do that as somebody who's never served at City Hall?
Well, because, Nick, I said before, I've had an opportunity to govern in a larger entity than Kansas City. And guess what? I had to deal with a commission. It wasn't 12 council people, but it was 6 commissioners that were drawn. We think this is diverse. You ought to look at the state of Missouri. Okay, urban, rural, north, south, east, west. And over my leadership, we had only one instance where we had anything that but was unanimous. So I have a proven track record for doing that.
Jolie Justice.
We have to come up with a funding source so that we can create, preserve, and stabilize. We've got to build more housing. We have to build it on transit lines, and we have to build it next to job centers. We can't keep building it on the extremes of the city. We have to preserve our housing stock. We have 9,000 vacant abandoned properties right now that are not for rent or sale. We need to get it rehabbed, and we need to get people back in it, and then we have to stabilize. We need a tenant's bill of rights. We need free legal services to make sure that people who are in their homes can stay in their homes.
Alicia Kennedy, you've been on the council 4 years. What possibly could you be doing, Mayor, that you haven't done on the city council already?
Well, that's why I'm running for mayor, because as I mentioned, all these great ideas everybody has up here, the money's spent. And so the mayor has the ability to set the budget. That is the number one job of the mayor, is to work with the manager to set the priorities of funding in this city. And so as the next mayor, I will make sure that the funding priorities reflect the needs of the community. Now, I am a proud supporter of public schools, and that's why I've consistently voted against these tax incentives that erode the tax base. I'm KCPS May, a proud graduate of Northeast High School. I live in Hickman Mills School District, and they're considering closing schools right now with the largest economic development project in the history of this state in their backyard. That ain't right. And so when you talk about what we're going to do going forward, we're going to build strong children. We're going to build strong neighborhoods. We're going to build an economy where businesses can thrive, small businesses can grow, and that's going to create a strong Kansas City.
Scott Wagner.
So you can't do everything all at once. So I'm going to combine what I think your next question is going to be. Is you've been here for 8 years. What have you done, right? So, all right, we'll start with that.
He's used it a couple of times.
So, I'm just putting my notes down.
A couple
I'm
of times
over here.
So when I came in 2011, we had our housing department essentially in receivership. The HEDFC, which you may have known, was famous for building $1 million homes in Beacon Hill, got in receivership. When I came in, I was asking, you be part of the team to get us out. And I was, and we've been successful in doing that. And the importance of that was that when HEDFC, back in the 07s, 08, and 09, went down, they took every CDC almost with them. And so when we talk about how are you going to build the capacity to do some of these things, we got out of receivership, we no longer owe the federal government $20 million, and now we're moving on to what we can do next. What we can do next, we've talked about funding, and I will tell you that, you know, when we tried in the last term to get $5 million out of the private sector. They didn't come forward. If we are going to get up to $75 million, it means we are going to have to put some money on the table. And I don't mean being on the city council. I mean all of us in this room. Because guess what? If you're looking for the general fund and you want to know where your money's being spent, when I started, 68% of it went to public safety. You know what it's going to be tomorrow when we vote? About 76. So unless you want to get rid of cops and firemen, don't start looking for housing to come out of the general fund. But the other thing that I will tell you is that we need to look at more and new and different types of ownership models, because at the end of the day, if we are going to count on the private sector, that does include creating and growing new CDCs and other sorts of new housing options and ownership options to support
them. Thank you very much. Jolie Justice, did you have a different answer?
Well, I just gave my answer, but I can give another one.
No, that's
if you'd
fine.
Like.
Jermaine Reed.
That's pretty good. You know,
Thanks for keeping me honest.
Yeah, you're doing good, Nick. You know, I approach this from a very personal standpoint because I, like a couple of other of the candidates here on the stage, at times were house to house, and I also experienced homelessness as a child where I lived at Community Link. And so I understand this from a very personal lens, and I will continue, as I have over the past 8 years, to make sure that I'm able to address this from keeping that lens in mind. We are in a housing crisis. This is not unique to Kansas City. This is something that is happening across this entire country. People are being displaced. People have been priced out of their actual homes. The renters are not able to afford the type of rents that they are able to afford. But we've got to do a number of things. One, I would say that we have to do what you've already heard already here by developing a dedicated affordable housing and healthy housing units. We have to preserve and improve our affordable housing stock.
Three, we also need to be able to help families access the healthy houses that they need. And then four, we need to be able to do what I start off with by being able to protect against displacement and also improving the quality of life. People should not live in subpar housing where you have mold, you have rats, you have roaches. You should not be able to do that, and we've got to be able to protect the citizens in our community. And as mayor, I will work with my colleagues to make sure that we do that. We have a national housing trust that we also need to have and that we need to be able to tap into. In addition, we need to be able to ensure that the housing trust fund is established and we put more than $75 million in it.
Thank you. Phil Glynn.
To end the affordable housing crisis in Kansas City, we need a mayor who has built affordable housing. I've spent my career bringing private investment into economically struggling communities to build quality, safe, beautiful homes that hotel workers, firefighters, teachers, low-wage workers, and middle-class workers can afford. We have to do it here in Kansas City with private investment, and what the taxpayers want is for local tax dollars to be spent on the kinds of things that stabilize neighborhoods and create safety in neighborhoods. And to do things like housing development, we have great opportunities to look outside of this whole other world out there of low-income housing tax credits, new markets tax credit, opportunity zones, and other sources of capital that I have experienced.
Quentin Lucas.
You know, I might kind of flip his comment to, I would think, to have a mayor who knows about the need for quality, affordable housing, you need to have a mayor who's experienced what life is like when you don't have access to that, who has family that doesn't know what that's like. And so for me, I think it's fundamentally this. We need to have a policy that is about infill development in established neighborhoods in Kansas City. We need to have a policy that's about rehab, both major and minor home repair, making sure that seniors can stay in communities, but also making sure we're creating access to capital for families that are currently renting, sometimes at $700, $800 a month, when they can get a $550 a month mortgage. I want to create more opportunities for that, and we need a vision that's connected with that sort of thing. One other final point. Demolition is not a housing policy. We need to make sure that in Kansas City that we know that we're really trying to put real money into rehab, long-term home repair, so that neighborhoods on the east side that Jermaine and I represent have that same opportunity to rebuild that we've seen in places like Hyde Park, that we've seen in northeast Kansas City and a lot of other areas.
Okay, lots of questions coming in from our audience right here. Glenn says he'll support the candidate who can fix the massive potholes on his street. Now, he's certainly not alone, of course. We've got many questions like that coming in. What would be the biggest change you would make as mayor to help those weary drivers who are still swerving to avoid large holes in the road? We'll begin with Jermaine Reed.
Thank you. You know what? I actually tore my car the other day and had the whole front axle torn off because of those darn potholes. And so for me, I have been trying to figure out what are the solutions. I think it is important to point out that the city currently is spending nearly $10 million a year, and this budget that we're getting ready to approve tomorrow will be $17 million. I have been the chair of our Transportation Infrastructure Committee, but we need to be able to make sure we have a very aggressive 24-hour repair for potholes, also making sure that we're able to do everything that we can to patch up broken sidewalks and other places in this entire community. But we need to have a 24-hour turnaround. And additionally, we got to be able to utilize smart technology, which has not been used at this point.
But your colleague, Alicia Kennedy, had mentioned earlier there was no money at City Hall. So how are you actually funding more money?
There's some money for this now. That's for sure. And actually, I can talk about this all day for that matter, because the citizens have already approved the geo bonds that allows for streets, roads, and bridges to be fixed. And we got to ensure that we're being intentional about making sure that those dollars are going to those very areas right now, and the taxpayers have made sure that we have the resources to do that.
Steve Miller, the biggest change you would make to the way we handle the issue of potholes in this community to help this man, Glenn, who says he's upset about this?
Well, I mentioned earlier, I mean, part of it is we did not honor the voters' will. You know, we diverted millions and millions of dollars of taxes to other needs in the city. And granted, we have a constrained budget. You can hear that tonight. And a city council has to exercise discretion on how to spend it. But I think when the voters tell you how you must spend it, and you have promised to spend it that way, that's how you must. So, Nick, I'll give everybody here an example of what if we maintain the roads properly. So people are in this area. If you drive Ward Parkway from 64th Street down to 43rd, it's like a war zone. But that same stretch of road with the same volume of traffic, about 30,000 cars, drive that from 43rd to 31st. Same roads, same weather, same city. There's not a pothole in it. That's because that was overlaid 2 years ago. It's not about our crews not working fast enough or anything else. It's about having the fiscal discipline and responsibility to honor the voters and routinely every year commit those dollars to keeping the roads in order. It didn't have to be this way.
But you were the chair of the Missouri Highway Commission. Did the state do a better job of fixing its infrastructure than the city did?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we did, we also faced a constrained budget, Nick, but the thing was that the money that came in, we didn't divert it to things other than transportation or roads or bridges, because by constitution, we couldn't. It had to be used on that. The other thing we do is we have a level of sophistication that I'll bring to the city. We use higher grades of asphalt for parts of the city that are more heavily traveled. With 30,000 cars, you use a different grade of asphalt than you do for the neighborhood streets. I'll bring that level of efficiency, sophistication, and programming. This will not happen again.
Jody Justice, will it not happen again under Mayor Justice?
Well, absolutely. Every mayoral candidate's going to promise to fix the potholes. I mean, that's obvious right now, Nick. But the reality is that we have 6,000 lane miles of road in this town. And a lot of it, frankly, is because we've had to take significant portions back from the Missouri Department of Transportation because they couldn't take care of the roads, and we have to take it on. So right now, we're building a new Buck O'Neill Bridge. We're doing it with some help from the state, we're doing it with some help from the feds, and we're doing it with some help from all of our neighboring communities who've given up some of their own funds to do that. That's because we're having to come up with creative local solutions to fix problems that D.C. can't fix anymore and that Jefferson City can't fix anymore. So moving forward, we hear you, we see you, we are increasing the budget. Your PIAC dollars now have dedicated money going to the resurfacing that we're talking about. We have more money in the budget next year, and we also have our geo bonds where we're working on the bottom line of resurfacing not just the streets, but going all the way down to the bones and build them back up. You said yes to those things, and we are doing those things now, and I'm proud to say that we're doing it without the help of Jefferson City.
Alicia Kennedy.
Yes.
This question about potholes, what are you going to do about them? Are you going to change anything about the amount of money or how that process works to be able to fix the huge holes that people see in their streets?
Well, I'll tell you, those huge holes didn't get there just because of the snow. They got there because the administration did not make road maintenance a priority. And again, we go back, clap to that, because that's the real issue here. Whether it's road infrastructure improvement or housing or crime, the bottom line is this administration has not made those things a priority and funded them adequately. And so we have to talk about fiscal discipline and responsibility. Steve Miller was right about that. But being the mayor of Kansas City is more than just fixing potholes. You got to know more than about roads. You got to know about people. You got to know about safety. You have to know about health. You have to know about how to run the city and govern properly, because one of the issues that we're talking about right now, this is the city manager's responsibility. And we're all sitting up here trying to field questions about how we're going to fix it. But if you don't have a good relationship with the city manager and he doesn't share your values, it's not going to change. And so I think we need to be very clear about the issues we're talking about today, because these budgets, these priorities were set by a joint budget submitted by Mayor Sly James and Troy Schulte. And I'm not necessarily saying they were wrong, but I'm saying these weren't their priorities. So everybody's campaigning on neighborhoods, infrastructure, and housing because they were neglected for the last 4 years.
Scott Wagner.
You know, my first attempt was to try to outlaw winter, and the law department said I couldn't do that. And the reason why I say that, I don't mean to be flippant about it, but this year we've had 25,000 calls to 311 related to potholes. You know how many we had last year? 2,500 by this time. There is a difference that comes when you have a continuous thaw-freeze cycle. Now, is that to say that we need to do more maintenance to our streets? You're darn right we do. We actually estimated back about 5 years ago that you needed to spend about $40 million to take care of the 6,400 lane miles that we have in this city. But you know what? We don't have $40 million today. So what do we have to do? Be smart about where we make our investments. But someone who says that this will never happen again, that's a roll of the dice as far as I'm concerned, because I know after 8 years, things happen. Things happen, and you have to go deal with them. So, and when we talk about priorities, again, I will just remind everybody, if law enforcement is no longer a priority or the fire department is no longer a priority, then let me know, because everywhere I go, I hear about that too. And so when we talk about how do we spend our money, what you voted on for PIAC, you're seeing the first year of that coming May 1st. That extra $7 million is going to be spent every single year on maintenance. And those maintenance crews are out there doing their work. And one final thing, I know I'm pressing my luck. Part of the issue that you have is manpower. Since 2008, we have cut 600 jobs in Kansas City, Missouri, working for the city. You want to know a reason why we can't get out there as fast as we can? It's because we don't have as many people as we used to have doing those same jobs. Thank you.
Quinton Lucas.
This has been an interesting conversation. I think the real issue is this. And first of all, thank you, Councilwoman Justice, noting that a big reason why we do have some real demands, for example, on Buck O'Neill Bridge, is because the state, MoDOT, really didn't fund what it needed to. I know there are other state sources, but that was a failure that Kansas City's taking back over, and an expensive one at that. But if we're talking about actual road funding, the issue isn't so much that we don't have money going to roads. We haven't lied to the taxpayers. The question is which roads. For example, up in the Northland, there is a, I like to call it a road to nowhere, roughly $9 million that's connected with a development deal that is, in essence, a brand new road, $9 million. That could go to road resurfacing in other parts of the city. That could go to fix existing roads. And so what we really need to focus on is how are we actually fixing the roads that Kansas Cityans are driving on every day? One thing that we did, I'll be quick, Nick, in the negotiations we had about the GO bonds, we said that thou shalt not build new roads with that. And you know, the interesting thing that's happened since then is they haven't built new roads. They've just expanded these two-lane country roads and now made them these four-lane things that don't have sidewalks or anything of that sort. We need to invest in road reconstruction on the roads that Kansas Cityans are traveling on.
Phil Glynn.
You know, this isn't about one winter of bad weather. It's not about one budget cycle. Everybody in this room who's been living in Kansas City a long time, you know that we always have money for the things that we really want to do. And if you want to see what the priorities of city leadership have been for a long time, look at luxury high-rise development downtown. Look at the construction of new parking garages. And every single one of those potholes that you have to drive over is a symbol of the neglect of neighborhoods. And what we need to get back to is a point where we recognize that economic development isn't about just doling out tax incentives in every part of Kansas City. It's about building strong neighborhood infrastructure, which is the foundation of economic development.
Scott Taylor, what are you going to do about potholes when you become mayor of Kansas City in June?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to fix them so I can stop calling the city manager about every half an hour and using some words that I don't enjoy using. But I'm being serious on that. But we've got to get that moving. But the bigger picture is I'm going to give you a practical solution. We've heard a lot of different statements up here about it. But I proposed taking – we have – each council district has $4 million of PIAC dollars. That's been authorized for 20 years. Those can be used in a lot of different special projects that don't have anything to do with roads or sidewalks. I would sit down as mayor with the new council and propose that for the next year – and I'll tell you why I would do this. For the next year, we take – maybe commit to that $24 million and put it to street resurfacing repair within those council districts and really send a message on top of the GO bond that we've done. You know, that will take a few years to catch up. We're talking about decades of neglect. But I will tell you, being out in the last year walking door-to-door to over 40,000 houses with my campaign, we've been out all over, in all neighborhoods. It's evident we need to accelerate the expenditure, not just the $17 million that we're increasing in the budget. We need, by doing this, though, $24 million plus the $17 in the budget, that puts us at $41 million, which is about the amount we need to be at every year.
Mayor Kay Barnes was known for bringing Sprint Center to town. Mayor Mark Funkhauser's team claimed his biggest accomplishment was drastically reducing the number of metal plates on your streets. Mayor Sly James brought Kansas City the streetcar. Phil Glynn, what would you like to be best remembered for as mayor of Kansas City?
Workforce development. We have neighborhoods in Kansas City where we have concentrated poverty and unemployment. Yet at the same time, we have companies across our region who say they can't find enough people to fill the jobs that exist today. So we need to get away from the idea that the marker of political success in this community is a groundbreaking or a ribbon cutting. The marker of success in this community should be this, that every job that gets created in this city is filled by somebody who grew up here. Let's cut a ribbon in front of that.
Thank you very much. The thing you want to be most remembered for as mayor of Kansas City, Scott Taylor, is what?
Well, I'll tell you, and let me just tell you what, in case you ask.
Come
about
on,
the last 8 years,
me.
I'll just go ahead and head that off.
Just tell it, yes.
So last 8 years, I've been on the Economic Development Committee and chaired it the last 4 years. I have been worked with every neighborhood throughout the city. Unique experience and been really an honor.
Yes.
We've had Momentum South Kansas City creating thousands of jobs, Midtown Plaza, Westport, Northland single-family homes, and we've done some great things east of Troost. I'll give my colleagues some credit for working on these projects. We don't have the connectivity, though, so what I would like to be remembered for is the mayor that really brought revitalization east of Troost so that all all families and children have the same opportunity in the city.
And you would like to be the mayor remembered for what, Quentin Lucas?
Who is remembered for a sustained decline in violent crime so people could feel safe. When you look at the competition in American cities right now, you can have all the nice things, fancy airports, fancy tourist attractions, but if you don't have a safe city, then it's on the decline. Look at Baltimore as an example. I want to make sure we have a safer city to live in long term.
Mayor Kennedy is best remembered as her mayorship for what?
You know, I speak strongly about crime and public safety because that's my background as a former prosecutor. And growing up in one of the most disadvantaged communities in this city. But what I can tell you that is the mayor of this city, I want Kansas City to be known as a place where you want to raise a family and start and grow your business. Those are going to be the things that are going to help us grow our population to finally get past the half a million population mark. Because right now, with Kansas City public schools having a stigma, we have to continue to support our public schools. We have to stop eroding their tax base. And we have to make sure we're supporting the taxing jurisdictions. Because you want to talk about reducing crime, you got to be willing to support the mental health fund. You got to be willing to support the community college with the skills training programs. You have to be willing to support the taxing jurisdictions and the school districts to make sure we have a viable city.
Sprint Center for Kay Barnes was a little shorter, but we like what you're doing there. Steve Miller, you're remembered as mayor for what?
Inclusive prosperity. And what I mean by that is that we create a 21st century city that can compete on a national and global level, that we realize where we sit in this country at the heart of America, the largest city in a 500-mile radius. And the way we're going to do inclusive prosperity, Nick, is first, jobs. Bringing jobs to Kansas City, keeping the jobs here, and making certain that we're making this a city from cradle to career, where we're providing educational opportunities and clear pathways to jobs, making certain we retain our local talent, like the Kansas City Royals, and making certain that we bring in new talent from the outside, like Patrick Mahomes. The other thing we've got to do besides jobs is we need to turn the narrative in Kansas City. We need to be a city that's known not for its segregation, but for its diversity, its equity, and its inclusiveness. Not only because of the right things, but that's the future
Mayor
of the
Scott
city.
Scott Wagner is best remembered for what?
Someone who gave neighborhoods a voice. I was a neighborhood president in the Indian Mound neighborhood in the Northeast area. I worked on a lot of the problems that we're talking about here tonight. I wanted to bring that voice on the city council. I think I did in a number of ways, including the first and only citywide sidewalk plan that we have. We're in the second year of 20 years of that. So whether it's that, whether it's healthy homes, whether it's a number of other things that I've worked on, I want to keep that moving forward.
Jermaine Reed.
I want to be remembered for the mayor that has helped really improve the quality of life for every citizen, regardless of what zip code you live in. That everyone has access to all of the necessities, amenities, and everything to really improve the quality of life.
And Mayor Jolie Justice is best remembered for blank.
I want to be the mayor that kept this city's momentum moving, and instead of just making lists about us being the best destination for barbecue or the best destination for bicycling or whatever list we've made this week, which were all really great, I want to be the mayor that makes sure we make the list for the most innovative housing policies, transportation policies, and making sure that we are ready for climate resiliency. And we can do that if we all work together.
We've tried to do something very different tonight, ladies and gentlemen. This hour, we've tried to allow you to have a better chance to compare and contrast these candidates. Thank them all for being with us. Election Day, Tuesday, April 2nd, you'll be picking two candidates.